Welcome to the Herd Quitter Podcast. I'm your host, Jared Lumen. On this show, we talk to farmers and ranchers who aren't afraid to think for themselves and do things a little bit differently. We hope these guests will challenge you to look at your farms and ranches in a new way and result in a more profitable and enjoyable business for you and your family. Hello and welcome back to the Herd Quitter Podcast. I'm pretty excited to share this episode with you guys. This guy, Rylan Crawford, is really crushing it. He's 31 years old, lives in Canada, and already has accumulated a herd of over 600 cows. He's running a ranch up there. He's got, like I said, a 600 plus cow herd, has accumulated some land, and really just accomplished a lot in a very short period of time, largely building this from scratch as he goes or as he went. And so just a really cool story that I'm excited to share with you. Talks a lot about kind of his management, some of the things that he prioritized early on, kind of focusing more on limited overhead and focusing his investments into land and livestock that actually generated return as opposed to just, you know, paint and more labor. He worked really hard to start. He only very recently got a little bit of help on the farm. So really a pretty impressive story that I think you're going to enjoy. At least I sure hope that you do. And we're going to dive into that in just a moment. But before I dive into that, I wanted to tell you a little bit about Ranch Right LLC and just kind of throw a plug out for them. They're a supporter of this podcast and really an awesome company that I believe a lot in. Essentially, you know, is that as business owners, we need to have good data about our businesses and our numbers, our financials, if we're going to be able to make good decisions about how we manage our business. And for a lot of us, myself included, having a good handle on the numbers may not be that easy. And if that's something you struggle with and you'd like some help with, I'd recommend you reach out to the team at Ranch Right LLC. They set you up with an accountant who puts your numbers in a very easy to use and utilize that data to make management decisions about your business. And so if that's something you're interested in, again, reach out to John Haskell and his team at RanchRightLLC.com. But now we're going to dive into my conversation with Rylan Crawford, and I hope that you enjoy this episode as much as I did. Well, thanks, Rylan, so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, happy to be on. So happy. Been listening for a while, too, so it's
awesome.
Yeah, interesting to do. I've never done one of these before, so.
Cool. Well, if you've been listening in, that I think makes at least three people I know who listen to this, so that's a good thing. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Probably more than that.
Yeah. No, well, yeah. Thank you. And I'm intrigued by your story because you're my age, you're just a tiny bit older, and you've accomplished so much. So I'm looking forward to hearing it. Maybe to just give our listeners an idea of where you're at and what you've done, maybe tell us about what you're doing now and where your operation stands as of today, and then we'll dive back into how you got into it.
Yeah, for sure. I'm Rylan Crawford. I'm 31 from Simpson, Saskatchewan, calving out. I think there's probably like 650, 660 out there now. I've been buying just a few, just kind of keep the numbers stable from the culls, I guess, which is
sure. A
tricky thing to do when calves or cows or bred heifers, I guess, is what I've been buying at 3,700 bucks. But
yeah,
that is what it is, I guess. Wow. Yeah. But no, having that many out, and then been buying calves as well, usually buy, you know, 200 to 300 a year, and then kind of try and read the tea leaves and use part of the different, you know, a little capital allocation, and also like finish some out some years or buy some bred culls in and calve them out and get the calves off them and sell them in August or just different things like that every year. But yeah, for the most part, it's, I don't know, it's also a lot of cows right now, just because that is the money is in bred cows at the moment, kind of thing. So got more of my headspace allocated to that, I guess. But no, and then as this thing kind of goes down, probably switch out of that a little bit and start running some nicer steers or whatever, stocking a little more and all that, and switching things a little bit around. But yeah, switch to summer calving all everything except obviously the heifers. I'm not brave enough to do them on pasture yet.
Okay.
But yeah, going along calving them out right now, I guess. But and then yeah, I guess that's kind of what I'm doing now, calving out.
Yeah. So you mentioned like $3,600, $3,700 a cow. And that brings up one piece of context that I maybe forgot to mention is I'm assuming that's Canadian dollars, which is a little bit different than United States. So maybe tell a little bit of context of where you're at and maybe the exchange rate, because that sounded pretty high when I heard you say that.
I think it's, yeah, what is it, 36 cents back where?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I think so. Yeah, that's, yeah, that would be quite pricey American. So
yeah,
that's,
yeah.
yeah.
Oh,
But
man.
No, it, yeah, like I said, just keeping the numbers stable, not taking a big swing. I took a big swing jumping my numbers last year.
Sure.
But yeah, just kind of staying steady, maybe growing a tiny little bit too.
Sure.
And then, yeah, and then also jumped out to Manitoba as well. Just picked up quite a bit of pasture out there, and that's with the idea of there's kind of, it's longer, worse grass out there kind of thing. And then so the idea there is kind of the same way a lot of guys do it in the States, is bringing southern cattle north. And then my idea, and you know, it's just a harder environment down in Arizona or whatever, and then bringing them up to, you know, wherever, Kansas, Nebraska, and it's a little easier on them.
Yeah.
So my idea there is to buy heifers out there, replacement heifers, develop them out there.
Sure.
And then run them out there for a year or two. And then bring them back to the grass, get them on that good prairie wool. And then it's hoping to make a real hardy cow kind of thing, just as a way of kind of playing with epigenetics a little bit without, you know, almost doing, you know, kind of thing.
Huh.
So is the
Man.
Plan too. So.
Well, this is always where I struggle when I'm doing these, is I ask for where you're at currently and I get super intrigued and want to ask more questions, but I also want to get into your history and how you got to where you're at today. And I never know which direction to go first, but I guess
Yeah,
we'll just dive into your history.
Could.
And then I want to get into more of that and what you're talking about with the different areas. But yeah, did you grow up in agriculture, ranching? What did you do and how did you get doing to what you're doing now?
Yeah, started out on, grew up on a grain farm too.
Okay.
Never had any cattle, didn't even know where to start with them at all. So it's went there, and then I went out to Olds College, graduated in 2010, got out of Olds 2012, and that's kind of where the cattle bug first kind of bit a bit. And then came back, still didn't have, well, maybe I had about 20 head at that point, but that's not a whole lot. And then was just hauling grain all winter, kind of got bored doing that. And then one of the guys I worked with was looking to get out of cattle, and then so bought another 40 from him, and then so that got me up to about 60, but was, you know, feeding hay, big cows, all that kind of good stuff all the time. And then just grew a little bit. It was, oh, I don't know, maybe grew another 20 the next year, 20 after that kind of thing. And by 2017 was up to a couple hundred kind of thing. And that's kind of where I started. Well, it was probably 2018 was the first time I tried to do anything different than feeding hay and getting into, and, you know, doing anything different than what kind of I knew kind of thing, but
sure.
Kind of branched out and tried backgrounding some calves, and was going into that with the expectation that everything was going to come out 800 pounds and be all shined and slicked right up and every, you know, going to top the market and everything like that. And didn't even know what I was doing really, but just expected everything to just kind of come out perfect and all rosy and all that. And I remember exactly where I was when I got the check for those things. Didn't watch them sell, of course, either. And then it's just an absolute gut punch, because I was kind of coming out of, you know, that was when things were really dropping too, coming out of that last cattle peak. So,
sure.
And just remember, and then I was just like, I need to do something different than that. So started, you know, looking into things and looking into, I've never gone for ranching for profit, but kind of reading some of those articles and just, like I said, I'm absolutely obsessed with this too. So just like I, you know, was working every day, and then I'd come home and read about it, you know, until 9, 10 at night kind of thing.
Yeah.
So was looking into all that. And then that's when I kind of first started playing around with the idea of summer calving.
Okay.
And was already, and then just kind of getting away from hay, getting away from bigger cattle too, or just feeding nonstop kind of things. So kind of started playing around with, you know, getting different things into TMR mixes, I guess. And, you know, I was getting kochia, straw, you know, still barley, silage and all that kind of thing,
sure.
and grain, whatever else, but, and then, you know, cheaper grass too that a guy was making, and mixing them into a ration, and thought I kind of had things pretty narrowed down on that. And then it was just, but the yard, like, it takes a long time to feed that many had too. So
Yeah.
was busy
Yeah.
4 or 5 hours every single day. And you know, I don't have nice tractors at all. Like they definitely get the job done, but it was a lot of breakdowns. I don't have a heated shop either. So, and it
Sure.
was a lot of long days fixing everything in the cold weather too. So that kind of got old. So
Yeah, I
switched
bet.
to year round grazing.
Yeah.
And then that's just cut down on yardage by
Year-round
so much.
grazing.
Year-round
Wow.
grazing with well, this is kind of the first year been doing it, got away with it year-round.
Okay.
But got the big thing out here is like it's kind of pothole-y country in some
Okay.
of it. Like it's real flat on some of it, and then you kind of get through a coulee and it gets real pothole-y.
Sure.
So the grain guys out there's a lot of wasted ground, like kind of in sloughs, prairie hills, all that. So I got running cattle out on those kind of, you know, because you'd be farming and you'd only be farming 120 acres. And so there's all this wasted ground. And then so that's what I got started doing. And it's supplementing in the wintertime too, or not supplementing, I guess, but I would take barley out to them every single day or every second day, sorry, to kind of keep them in that grazing mindset. And they were start at 3 pounds of supplementation and then of barley, I guess, and obviously the minerals mixed in with that. And then I would kind of, as it got every 5 degrees, it would get colder. I would bump it up by 0.5 pounds per head per day.
Sure.
And then so that got my, like, I was, you know, I can graze a cow depending on the weather. Like, I don't want them out there. If it's minus 25 for a couple of days, that's fine. And that's obviously Celsius. But if it gets out to a week or so of minus 25, minus 30, like that's another thing too. Like we have weather that'll just kill cows in,
Yeah.
you know, central Saskatchewan. So I feel like you do need to have winter feed kind of ready to rip
Sure.
kind of thing. But I guess that's part of my plan is to build, to get, still make winter feed or whatever, but that goes into the calves as a, you know, backgrounding as kind of
Sure.
a way to have a reserve there, I guess. But
Yeah.
no, and then that's kind of my big advantage. Like I'm feeding cows, like I said, this is Canadian dollars as well, but I think it's about a just over $1 per head per day kind
Really?
of thing. And that's, yeah. And that's like this year I got right until I think January 22nd. And then so that's a big advantage I have. And then I can also do that in the spring too, before they get out on pasture, because there's just so much of this land around.
Yeah.
But the big thing is too, like obviously you need a perimeter fence, but that's, I've been kind of playing around with the idea of getting that, like those electric collars, the vents. And then, because that's they you do need a base station, and those are about $4,000. And I think every single collar costs you about $35 or $40 or something like that. And I think that's American. But
Yeah.
that's kind of the idea or the next step too, as kind of I outgrow some, because there's just not enough around to grain land with a bunch of fence around it.
Sure.
And so maybe that's a way to expand that a little bit, because that's such an advantage to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And then but even like corn, like in the corn grazing, like with absolutely everything included, that jumps up to about $1.89 kind of thing per head per day.
I guess I maybe got lost a little bit in that is so what are you currently feeding? What is the mix? How are is it you said grazing year
Oh,
round, but you're mixing or you're feeding a supplement on top of that or?
just barley is the only thing that I supplement with.
Okay. And they're just grazing the, so
When
that's
they're out, when they're out on kind of this wasted acre, I don't even know what a guy would really call it, but wasted acre kind of thing, out on cropland, I guess, essentially.
like
But there's still
residue,
one thing.
crop
Yeah, yeah.
residue and stuff. Okay.
Yeah, but they kind of get into the crop, but it's mostly like there's a lot of grass on these pieces as well.
Okay.
So that's what they kind of get out and graze, which is a nice way to do it because then it's stockpiled. So.
Yeah. And so the $1.08 per day or whatever in feed cost, that's the supplement that you're feeding on top of the grazing. And the grazing is that's free.
Oh, I see.
Nobody's charging you for the freezing or the
No,
grazing.
well, some guys don't. Like some guys you can kind of sell on, it's good for your land, it's good
Sure.
for it is. And
Yeah.
then they just go for it kind of thing. But
Okay.
for the most part, you can pay guys, you know, half a dollar kind of thing, or
Sure.
up to 75 cents per head per day. And
Okay.
that's even still at that, that's pretty reasonable. So,
For sure.
and that's included with that. That takes me to about $1 point buck and a dime kind of thing per head per day. And then
Wow.
I guess like the TMR mix last year, I think, what was that? That was about just under $3 per head per day. And I thought I had that pretty narrowed down as well, just
Okay.
on what things were kind of getting last year too. No, the corn grazing, I guess, was a point
Okay.
8, 8, 9, I guess, per head per day.
Corn, standing corn?
Standing corn.
Okay, I
Standing
maybe I told sorry, I totally
corn.
missed you
So
say
yeah,
that then.
no,
Okay.
I talk quick, so
No.
no, that's, I get rambling too. So no, and then that's good. And then so that's going, the corn's really nice too. And then so what I do there too, like a lot of that is still in hay. Like, so what I
Sure.
do there is they're in about 6 day paddocks. So they get in there, they fill up on their, I fill them up on alfalfa, which works. So I do alfalfa, an early cut alfalfa to get lots of protein in them. And that's fed out at about, works out just the way the feed test worked out. It's about 10 pounds per head per day. But I
Okay.
do that every third day and just to kind of keep them grazing, keep them in that mindset. And so they go, you fill them up on hay. They go into the corn or whatever, you move the paddocks, and then they kind of go through the cobs, they go through the leaves and the stalks. And then when they get onto the stalks, give them another shot of alfalfa too, like I said, every third day. And then, but yeah, that's, it's worked out really good this year. It's went really well. I think definitely going to keep that going as well. So,
So can you help me walk through the costs of like corn grazing? Because that's something
yeah.
we've looked at here, and I don't know if it's like a land cost and if it's like how that our expenses. I don't think we can get that cheap grazing standing corn, maybe, but we've not
Yep.
actually done it. It's just paper numbers, so maybe we're doing something
Yeah.
wrong.
I
Help me kind of walk through those numbers, I guess.
Yeah, so like it's on a 30 or 300 acre piece of land, or 300 acres or whatever. So the seed is probably going to cost you, like, is, I don't, you could definitely get cheaper corn seed, I believe, but this is kind of like a, it's kind of more of a grazing mix. It stays greener longer, I guess, is kind of the point of it. But that works out to about $30,000. And
Okay.
then another 10,000 to plant it, probably another 40, depend on what fertilizer doing, but 45, 50 for fertilizer, probably another 5,000 for spray, just because it is a, you don't, I don't like to hit it a lot with spray, but it does get it.
Okay, 30,000 plus 10,000 plus you said what for fertilizer and what for spray?
It would be like 45, or I see. For fertilizer and spray together, it'd probably be 50,000, probably a little over that actually now.
Okay. So you're in all in $90,000 or
Yep.
$300 an acre. And
Yep.
that does that include land rent? Did we say land rent?
No, that doesn't, no.
Okay.
But that's coming, like, and then there's also
Okay.
some more onto that. Like, and then
Sure.
even like your hay is probably like, so just because, it is what it is. Like, that's probably going to cost you another 50,000.
Okay.
They get a 3-to-1 mineral. So that's probably another, oh, probably 12,000 a year, 11,000 maybe.
Okay. Sure.
Labor, yeah, labor to set up paddocks. There's, I think there's 20 moves roughly, kind
Okay.
of thing,
Yeah.
if that
20
works
moves
out.
total over the whole winter. You're moving them 20 times.
Let me do the math on that. Or no, 50, sorry. I
Okay.
don't, that was on a different thing.
No problem.
Yeah. And then so that's, 2 hours to set up a paddock, maybe not even that, just because you're drilling into ground and use a 7/8 rod aircraft cable and then these dare clips. And I don't know if that's the best way to do it. I was looking on Gallagher's site the other day and they kind of got these, oh, it's kind of a dual pigtail post, and they're supposed to have a really good base on them, but I haven't tried them yet, so I shouldn't even talk. But that way too, with the aircraft cable, they'll cut these little plastic line holders, I guess. And so that kind of gets annoying after a bit. And then if you have any knots in the aircraft cable, they hang up in them and it gets a little painful too.
Sure.
But it's like the cows never go through it really either. And that's, use a double line system as well. So a hot line on the top and then a ground on the bottom. And that way you don't have any grounding issues in the wintertime either. And that's really kept them in check either. Like the cows really don't break out ever, which is really nice. So.
Good. Yeah. Okay. So I'm just trying to follow. I guess I'm not sure how exactly to calculate this. So I'm trying to kind of calculate in a per acre for the corn production cost. And then we can add hay maybe on top of that. But I'm maybe somewhat lost. No, we were at somewhere around $100,000, maybe all in for the
Yeah.
land, the corn
Yeah.
costs.
Yeah. You added your land on top of that,
How many
on top of
grazing?
what?
Yeah, what was the land cost on top
It
per
probably
acre?
would be 100,000 by the time you add
Okay.
all your expenses in as well, just to
Sure.
get it on. Yeah, you know, so that's
Okay,
Canadian
so
also.
that is $333 per acre. And how many cow days, I guess, are you able to get off of that? How many days are you feeding that across?
Well, that's the thing. Like it really depends on your rain. Like that's I got
Sure.
about 13 inches of rain on that.
Okay.
And I was
Yeah.
pretty excited about that because some of my pastures this year were only 3 inches kind of thing.
Sure.
And then so it grew. I don't have it, like I'm not done grazing it yet, so I don't really have a
Oh,
number for it.
yeah. Okay.
But
Sure. Oh, that's
it
cool.
looks to get me to about May 15th, May 20th,
Okay.
kind of thing, if that helps you.
When did you start?
I started January 20th.
Okay. So call it what, 4 months, 120 days.
Yep. Yeah, it
So
would be 120 days. Yep.
120 days for 650 cows
Yep.
times 120 days. So that's 78,000 cow days.
Yep.
$100,000 divided by 78,000. No, 78,000.
Well, you'd be a
Well,
little more into
100.
that too, because like I said, like your hay is going to cost
Yeah.
50,000, your minerals
Okay.
11,000, and
Okay.
then it's all the depre you still have to depreciate, you know, your
Sure.
equipment cost and all that, because
Yeah.
you are still feeding hay or whatever,
Okay.
and then your
Sure.
labor and all that too, so.
Yeah. Well, I'm probably not able. Whenever I try to do math while doing a podcast, it doesn't go well. So I appreciate you at least sharing through that, and somebody can
Yeah.
walk through that and maybe see what that works out separately. But I'm sure
Yeah.
you're probably right that it's cheaper than just about anything else. But
Well,
I
that's the thing. Yeah, even if it jumps up to $2 per head per day, it's still, you know, quite a
yeah.
bit cheaper than feeding a TMR mix every.
Exactly. Yeah.
All the, and it just saves you so much time too, you know. Like I said too, it's they don't. I don't hardly look at them for 2 days, you know,
Yeah.
and then you go out there and check everything and. And there's definitely some cows that fall out too. Like they just don't take to it, I guess. But for the
Sure.
most part, kind of got a cow that's if they can get through that shoulder season grazing, that you know, that wasted crop acre grazing or whatever, they take to corn grazing fairly well too. So
So Rylan actually reached out to me right not too long after this recording with a little bit of an updated numbers list on this cost of feed per day doing standing corn grazing. And so I thought I'd share that with you just so there's hopefully a little more clarity, because I don't feel like I did a good job of asking the right questions there during the podcast. I apologize. I struggle sometimes when I try to do numbers while recording a podcast. So hopefully this gives a little bit of clarity. But he included all of his costs in here. He included seed costs, custom planting, custom fertilizer, chemical, land rent, labor to set up the paddocks, depreciation on his grazing equipment, mineral, everything. And then he says also he's got a cost in here for his optional cost of supplementing hay that he does, and his total cost, and also the yardage to feed that hay. So he's actually including, some pay for the actual labor and whatnot to do that. His total cost when he includes all of those costs works out to $2.66 per head per day. But he then says that if he were to get rid of this the hay, he would lose obviously some of the stock days, but his adjusted cost per head per day would be $2.11 per day just grazing the standing corn. So I wanted to share that here and give a little bit more clarity on that. I thought it was worth sharing. But while I've got you here, also, I also would like to share with you a little bit about my podcast sponsor today, and that is Barn to Door. Barn to Door is a solution built for independent farmers, and they're actually the company that my wife and I use to manage our direct-to-consumer business, all of our sales, both online and in person. But recently, they've actually rebranded their podcast, and that now is called the Independent Farmer Podcast, and they share tips from successful farmers, industry experts, financial advisors, and more. If you're interested in expanding the sales and reach of your independent farm, check out the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Again, that's the Independent Farmer Podcast. And to learn more about the software Barn to Door offers for independent farmers, you can go to www.barntodoor.com/herdquitter. If you choose to sign up, you'll get access to a free academy session. That's a $99 value. Again, the website is www.barntodoor.com/herdquitter, and I'll have that link in the show notes. But thanks so much. Hopefully this clarification on Ryland's feed cost helped, and now we'll dive back into my conversation with him. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, it's something that we've thought about doing here, and I don't know. I mean, we were talking about $300 all in cost there. I mean, we're almost that just in the land costs here. You know, we're $200 an acre just for the land cost. And so I don't know if that's what throws the numbers out. And I don't, you know, if our production goes up proportionally to the cost, maybe it's still just as good. But I don't know. But as far as the actual like standability of the corn in your snowfall and your winters, is that not been an issue or?
No, not really. No, it stays up. Like I said, this is a special variety too. I think it's North Star.
Okay.
But it seems to hold. Like it, like the leaves blew off a little bit was almost the only issue. But like it caught so much snow too. Like there's still ice and it's pretty much melted here now.
Okay.
But it's caught so much. Like it just, and the trash on the whole soil looks pretty good. And the cows, like I said, definitely. They did a really good job of it too. They took to it a lot better too. I thought they'd waste a lot more, but yeah, it's like I said, just keeping them in that grazing mindset all nonstop. It just, mm-hmm. they took right to it. Like I was a little worried about, well, just when they came home from, we had a pretty good storm there. It was middle of January when they came home, I guess is why they had to come home,
mm-hmm.
but it was minus 30. Wind was howling minus 35. And I think it touched 40 one day. So obviously that's too much. They would have just went backwards kind of thing. Sure. So got them home before that. And, but so I shredded bales thinking like that would get them a nice started right across. They had to run across it and they ran right across the hay and went right to the corn and started grazing when I was bringing them home. So that was neat to see. I was pretty happy to see that. It was kind of a relief. So
yeah, no, that's awesome. For sure, when you give them a chance to do something, they surprise you sometimes. I'm surprised to see sometimes their cows eating corn stalks before they're eating some hay. If we've got something out there too, it's
it is neat to see. It's kind of neat. Then at the same time, like some of the older girls or whatever, like I sell all my culls in August, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I kept some of the old culls at home. And so they were on a little bit of a TMR mix every day too. But then, so when they were on that and I tried to put them out on the corn, just because they were used to being fed, they took a long time to get onto the corn. So like I said, just keeping them in that grazing mindset is as big as anything, I think, kind of thing. So
sure. Yeah. That's always our fear is like, if things are bad, weather gets tough and we think about giving them a little bit of hay just to get them through a cold snap or something like that, then that's the worry is, well, now they're hooked on hay and that's all they want. Better if it's not coming. So right or wrong, through some of those cold snaps here, we've just kind of toughed them through it and they continue to prove that they can do it. But I hear a lot of people say like how it's just, you know, the little bit of supplement in those days is worth it. So I don't know what's right or wrong with that one, but especially the further north you go, I'm sure it gets pretty nasty. And for longer periods of times, a lot of times our cold snaps are, you know, they might get 30 below, or especially with wind chills, but it's only 3, 4, 5 days, maybe 6 or 7 and stuff instead of months maybe or something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I noticed. Like, was it last year you guys got that big storm go through or whatever? And it was kind of the same.
Yeah.
That minus 35 or whatever with the winds howling too. And definitely, just not that I was there obviously, but just what guys were kind of saying on Twitter, and it was just like, we're going to get weather like that no matter what. We'll probably get a couple spells of it too, so
it's the challenge you get to deal with, but you seem to make it work. So I want to go back a little bit further if that's all right. You said you were on a grain farm, and I'm curious, what did the process of like moving into your own thing look like? Your cow calf thing, was it sort of a slow gradual, I'm building this up while I work for the family? Or why did you choose to even go to cattle as opposed to crops anyway? A lot of people are making the shift from cattle to crops, and you were going the other direction.
Yeah, exactly. So another thing that happened up here too in like 2000 12 to 14 is we got just a, it was right when I was coming back from college, and we just got hammered with rain. Like, it was raining every single day. And just like I said, usually, I don't know, we'd get maybe eight, 9 inches, and we were getting probably three or four times that every single year. Yeah. Came back to try and grain farm, and I was only getting half my acres in.
Sure.
Obviously, I had all my expenses, so went pretty deep into the hole. Two right off the bat, but at the same time, in that same time frame, is when everything was recovering from BSC. So I was buying cows, you know, fairly cheap. And that's, it just was what, not that I had a plan at all, I'm just was lucky, but they were, you know, I was buying the cows, what the calves were bringing in the fall too. Like, I was still selling in the fall too. So it just, timing as much as anything. And just, like I said, I didn't know what I was doing at all, but it, like I said, grain wasn't very good and cattle were good.
That's interesting, because I was thinking when you were talking 2012, 13, 14 there, that's, at least in the U.S., was the high cattle market, and things were really pricey, and grain was doing really good, and it seems like it was kind of backwards up there, where you were able to buy in cheaply right as the market was riding up somehow in the cattle market.
Well, it was right before the peak, like I think it was 2014 was roughly the peak there.
So
I was buying things in, you know, 2012, 2013, and then that's right before the peak. So I just by pure luck, like I didn't, like I said, I didn't know what I was doing there.
Yeah.
But just timing as much as anything was kind of the reason too. Just like I said, there wasn't, just with the way the rainfall was in grain, and the grain's quite a bit better now. Like that was just a weird time frame for grain, but was what it was kind of thing. So.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, cool. So you were doing that while, were you crop farming on your own and transitioning some of your own acres, or were you working for family?
Yeah, family. And then I still had my own, you know, I was part of the grain farms, all that, until about like 2017 was kind of when I started pulling back from the grain farm.
Okay.
Had probably a couple hundred head by that point. And then 2018 jumped up, you know, another 80, and then next year was up to 300 kind of thing. So that's right. 2018 was really when I tried transition to a smaller cow, and then just doing everything cheaper, getting it, you know, getting everything a little more. So
so if you don't mind me asking, and please tell me if this isn't something you're comfortable talking about, but I'm always I'm curious, early on there, like, how did you, what was your mindset like, and what were the actual, what were you doing for financing? And like, I mean, that was a, to scale as rapidly as you have in less than 10 years, over 600 cows, it's a lot of equity, and that's a lot of value of cattle. And that's, you know, for some people, for myself, you know, that'll be stressful. And then there's just like the physical, like, how do you convince a bank to lend you that kind of, that kind of money, or how did you actually make it happen?
Yeah, for sure. So some of it was like lease to own kind of setup. And then, so that's nice too. Like that's great. So some guys want to do that just
from like retiring farmers or something.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, just like I said, it helps their taxes out.
Yeah.
Too, as also there is a little benefit for them too. So that's one way. And obviously the breeder associations, stuff like that. And then there's different setups too, like credit limits or whatever. If you're just buying in a credit limit's nice to buy a cull cow in, because it's just a year that you're going to have them. It's not even a year really. Like if you buy them in, say, October when guys are ditching them, and that's like a bred cull, I guess. And then you can take out credit limits year or whatever like that. And but you're selling, like I said, selling them in August.
Sure.
When the market's going to peak too, so for the cull market anyways, so and then you got a calf off them too, so that kind of helped build up cash flow or whatever too.
Okay.
Is a nice way to do it. But just playing around with different systems of financing for different types of cattle as well. Like there's just different systems that work better for different things too, but leaned on breeder associations quite a bit for sure.
What is that, breeder associations, like?
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's, I don't know if maybe they have it down there, but it's, they used to be kind of a pooled, it's almost like a cattle specific lending association.
Okay.
And then, there's breeder and feeder sides to that as well, but it's,
no, I'm not familiar with that. Maybe we have it here, but I've never heard of it.
Yeah. They have up here. So it's all they do is lend for cattle or feeders or whatever, what you're buying or whatever. But Yeah, definitely use those quite a bit too, because yeah, I remember when I was buying cattle in at the time. It was very hard to convince. It's better now, like it obviously, but I remember them talking about it and like just, well, equity's big too. And then had my own land, and that was kind of right about the, like, your land was pretty high at the time. But was buying that, what would that be, 160,000 and per quarter kind of thing. And then it really took off now, and could probably sell that for over four now.
So you
But
purchase, you are buying land.
yeah, not a whole lot, but I was right off the bat, especially for grain farming. So I had some equity built up in that, which helped things at the bank, obviously. So yeah.
Pretty impressive to be purchasing land and expanding cows as rapidly as you did. I
Yeah,
mean, were you go ahead.
wasn't buying a whole lot of land, but at bankers do like to see that as well, and that's one thing too. Like I know that there's probably ways to go about doing it differently. Like if I was going to start, would probably get into stalkers right off the bat, rent land and all that too. But if I think guys that are renting out land like to see you committed a little bit, like, and the bankers obviously too like to see you own some land, I feel, kind of thing. So
Makes sense. And as far as finding land, sourcing land, either for lease or for purchase, was that how did you go about doing that?
yeah, it wasn't, I don't know, it was kind of just the way it was here too. Like guys were almost switching. That was about the time kind of too, like guys were breaking up a lot of hay land, a lot of pasture land too, and it's rough pasture land out here. It's hilly, it's bushy, lots of sloughs and all that everywhere. So it's tough work. So guys were kind of wanting to switch out of that, or just not running their harder pastures anymore either. So got some rougher pastures off the bat, was kind of how I got into it, I guess. But and then just building on that too, and like I said, a lot of guys were looking to get more into grain, I feel, so they were looking to switch out of cattle almost. So that's kind of how it started. But just, you know, there's luck involved with that too, and all that. So yeah, just keeping a good name, always paying your bills on time definitely helps. And paying, I guess another thing I was doing too is like I definitely was, just by running things a little, not even harder, but you know, running myself harder almost, there's more money around to kind of put towards rent. Like I was kind of skimping on other things so I could pay more rent, if that kind of,
It's cutting on the overhead, but you could have hired more people.
yeah.
You could have bought nicer equipment and you focused all your capital towards expansion of
Yeah,
cattle
on
and
ex
land base.
yeah, exactly. So that's definitely one thing I definitely key on, because like I can compete with the guys that were way more established, but I felt, because they were, you know, some other guys too, you know, like you go to any farm or whatever and they have nicer front wheel assists or whatever, and they roughly know their numbers, I feel like a lot of guys do, but it's definitely subsidized by grain, a lot of these farms too. So but well, not officially, but you know what I mean, they're with the kind of cash flows everything, but as I knew I could compete with them, so I was like, well, I have to run harder and just put more of my money towards paying more for rent or buying land or whatever like that. And that's definitely, you know, just capital allocation was a little heavier on that side, I guess, was another way too. So
Well, I mean that's huge, 'cause really overhead doesn't actually make you money. I mean, there's a certain level of overhead that's required just to operate, but the difference between a, old, faded out paint 40-year-old two-wheel drive tractor and a front brand new R series John Deere, front wheel assist might be over $150,000 difference, but both can pick up a bale and move it where you need it to be or whatever and stuff. And so the operator who's running that $150,000 more in that loader tractor and the heating, air conditioned, side by side, and the big old, 1-ton new dually, and those guys are at a disadvantage because of that overhead pulling their capital out. So yeah, you that makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, and that's another thing too, like definitely, I don't know, I believe there's, in the cattle cycle, obviously, it's like it is fairly predictable. So it's, I kind of try and read the tea leaves a little bit and figure out where the bottom is going to be as well. And I want to force myself to spend up to that much. Like nowadays, like in Canadian too, like I roughly think that's going to be 1400, 1500 bucks that by the time you sell all your pencil neck taffers and your, you know, your fancy steers or whatever, it's going to average out to about there, like 14, 15. So that's where I kind of want to spend to. And then it's a little safer too that way too. So, but it's definitely issues with, you know, cutting costs and, or just not spending to that amount too, and then spending all that as well. But that's, like I said before, I have a big advantage with grazing all this cropland that's kind of just sitting there as well too, with a bunch of grass on it. So
that's huge. And that's, I mean, what some past guests and stuff have talked about is you're not just managing an operating business, but you're managing, you know, an equity and capital allocation business. And you've been intentional with that on what you spend on overhead versus land and stuff. And then, like you just addressed, is when are you buying livestock and when are you selling livestock and what class of livestock do you own at any given time based on current market conditions? And
yeah, that's major too. And even capital allocation too. Like it's, you can kind of dive into it further too. Like I feel like I can kind of, like I got a, you know, TMR mixer, bale shredder, couple tractors, all that too, but it's I definitely put a lot more money into logistics as well, just because I kind of removed some bottlenecks for me. Like I can move a lot of cattle quickly because I got portable corrals, I got a couple different loading chutes, I got a cattle liner semi and all that too. So like I get as much probably more money into logistics than I do in feeding equipment kind of thing. So just a way to kind of take a top off the operation, or, you know, like I said, just looking at where you feel you can't expand because of this and just working around to get out of that as well. So it seems like it really works. But
yeah, well, it must be if you continue to do it. And I'm intrigued by the fact that you're running cow calf profitably so far north, because like all the experts, you know, the Jim Garishes and stuff talk about is that the more feed days, the higher, well, in Dallas Mountain Ranching for Profit, they talk about this too. The more days you feed, the less likely you are to be profitable, or the, you know, I mean, there's an inverse correlation between fed feed and profit. And you're about as far north, I think I was just looking on the map, Simpson, Saskatchewan's, I mean, it's several hours north of North Dakota, right?
Yeah.
The border. I mean, it's way up there. And I don't know.
It is pretty far up too. So it's, like I said, I don't know if I would, like I said, nobody was really running stalkers around here either. So when I got into it, it was just what, but that's what I like. I like cow calf.
Sure.
You know, I like running stalkers as well. But it's, and then kind of, like I said, that value stuff is nice too. Like I said, cull cows, finishing off your own calves or whatever. That's nice, but that's probably the work I don't like doing, obviously, because when you buy cull cows, and some of the nice ones want to kill you and the bad ones are too lazy to even walk to a calving chute. So bad bags and all that too. And then, like I said, finishing out things and you're feeding into June, July too. So tied up every day doing that for a couple hours, but I like cow calf. I like, especially this summer grazing, like it's so nice kind of thing, and adjust my grazing around that too. So, and then seems like a good system, but
I mean, talk a little bit more about that system then. What, you know, calving in summer, you call that, when is that you're calving, and how much work do you have put into these cows to calve out all those cattle? Do you have summer help, or do you have help at all, I should ask as well?
I just actually got two guys, and they're great, two part-time guys last year. So that's like, I was doing all this pretty much all by myself. The odd guy would come the odd day before that. But I got just lucked out with two really good guys too. So they're really good. They took two. It's a different system than what a lot of guys are doing too, but eager to learn and all that, and really good. But start calving out usually on, what would it be, May 25th, June 1st kind of thing.
Okay.
So I do graze my summer calves different than, like, last year, because I was buying a lot of calves, I calved out a lot in the spring too. So I grazed my spring calves and my stalkers fairly similar. Like, they get out a little earlier. Just, you want to get around everything before it starts to head. So I feel like they have to be out maybe, you know, fairly little earlier too, especially up north too, just to get around everything before it starts to, because just the way they cycle or whatever, but or cycle around in the rotational grazing. But on my summer calvers, I do leave, the way I do it there is they'll be in a bigger paddock, like probably, I don't know, maybe on ideal, maybe it depends on pasture, obviously, because some are bigger than others, but they'd probably be out on 60 acres.
Okay.
Moving them once a week. And like the first year I grazed summer calvers, I felt I was just moving them around too quickly. Like usually what I do with the stalkers and the spring calvers is they're moved twice a week. And then, so that's obviously on smaller paddocks or whatever, and moving them around, trying to get that, like a 12 times conventional stalking rate on that. Like say you have, if your neighbors are doing it, like up here, it's pretty common to have 20 cows continuous grazing on a pasture for okay. like on a quarter, I guess.
Oh, sure.
For years. Like I want to jump that up to, you know, 240, you know, just jump that up by 12 yeah. times or whatever, 20 times 12 or whatever.
Sure.
Obviously for a smaller day. But so the cow, I felt like I was losing calves because of it, because the cows would just get away from the calves. They dump their calf and then be too fresh to follow.
Okay.
And so what I started doing was just getting them out later on grass. Like, so they'd probably, if I start May 25th, they're probably going to be, they definitely are May 15th, May 20th kind of thing.
Yeah.
Get them out on those pastures and just, like I said, open it up, move once a week and just don't push them at all. Like open up the gate,
sure.
let them walk and just kind of come and clean up a little bit after and leave that gate down just in case there is something. But it's definitely improved. Just the only way for me to count really is bringing everything back in the fall and count and how many cows went out and how many calves came back in is really, like, that's almost the biggest part to summer calving, is getting your head around. You think there's going to be a disaster, but it doesn't seem to really be.
That was when we moved from March calving to May calving. Somebody told me, just get used to the fact that you may not see a calf for a couple of days, and that's okay.
It's like I said, that's the biggest thing is getting your head. Like I said, too, you're so worried about what's going to go wrong, but nothing really seems to go wrong. But it's so, and like I'm breeding these things Charlet, too, to kind of get a consistent calf drop off them and paint everything, like a real calving age Charlet.
Okay.
But yeah, and just it goes so good. Like it just like I said, I just let them buck, kind of like get them out there and just let them do their thing. And it's like I said, was worried about the calves getting a little wild too, but if you're out rotating them around, they stay fairly calm just because they're used to people being out there all the time too. So
yeah,
but it's once, like, it's a 60 day calving window. And then so once, you know, you get into the end of July or whatever, then I start speeding them up a little bit too. So like speeding up the moves, tightening up the paddocks and grazing them a little more management intensive. But like I said, last couple of years, I've definitely backed off the how many moves I'll do in a week, and even backed off, made a bigger paddock size as well too. So I'm just kind of, like I said, don't want to stress them out too much either, moving them around all the time. Like I said, I felt like I was losing some calves, but
yeah,
wasn't losing a whole lot either though. So
sure. Yeah, and while we're on calving here and stuff, so am I understanding that you kind of, do you keep heifers, or are you pretty much always just buying in replacements?
Great terminal program, actually. So
okay.
Or pretty great, but it's I just feel like by the time, if you're, I don't know, I shouldn't even go, but I always buy it, just like I said, with your working capital, I feel it just ties things up a little bit too much if you're keeping replacement heifers.
Sure.
And you're shooting for, you know, maternal, your steers are going to be smaller too. And in, like, an Angus always sells good.
Yeah.
But I feel that's what most guys kind of do for maternal lines anyways. But it, it's, I feel like you are going to be a little back on your steer prices, especially if you're shooting for replacement heifers as well, because you can't just obviously have all heifers.
Sure.
But yeah, it's just, that's the way I kind of do it, I guess. I'm open to that being wrong, but
it actually makes a lot of sense if it's simple and you can buy value, you know, buy the cows that are valuable. I mean, it's a little more frustrating probably right now when you're spending as much as you are, like you're saying, on replacement females, but it's
I feel 7 years out of 10, it does pan out right, but it's right now it doesn't. So it's
and like you said, you can adjust your stocking, your you know, what you're carrying as far as classes to what does make more sense if cows are not the best purchase at a certain period of time or something like that. But it gives you flexibility and simplicity and stuff as well. And you're not emotionally attached to a specific animal or
No,
herd like you
no.
are if you bred them and raised them yourself and
Yeah,
stuff.
that's too. So it's I don't think
Yeah.
there's some cows that would go, if I was to sell all the cows, there'd definitely be a few on the last load, but it
Yeah.
wouldn't,
Yeah.
so
Sure.
it, but yeah, just the biggest thing too, you want to buy from a guy that buy your half your bred heifers from a guy you trust you. And like
Yeah.
it another point on that too is it speeds everything up a year too. You don't have all the
Yeah.
costs developing
Yep.
them. So
Yep.
it
Your cash flows quicker. Yeah. You have
yeah, like
quicker and faster. And
on your working capital, it really helps out. So
yeah.
it's that's one way I've definitely helped expand as well. So, but
Sure.
it's a you want to buy. Tricky thing is buying from a guy you want, you
Yeah.
trust or whatever. So definitely got lucky with a couple guys up here
Yeah.
and just seeing that or whatever. And
Yeah.
most of my cows too, like they used to be a little more Angus for the most part, but I was, they were a little simmy before switching to more of an Angus Hereford kind of thing now. So just getting a little hardier animal the
Sure.
last probably 3 years, kind of switched to the Hereford, or
Okay.
it's the Angus, but a little more
Yeah.
Hereford in them, whatever too. So
Yeah. Well, that partly kind of maybe answers some of my question too. You talked about calving heifers in the barn, and I didn't fully understand that, I guess, and stuff, but you're not able to control your genetics as much and have good
no,
Cabernese heifers and stuff. And you don't worry about calving so much with the cows, obviously. They're
no,
older,
not at
shouldn't be an
all. It's
issue, but you're
yeah.
not, yeah, you're not breeding for calving these type genetics. So that's why you probably choose to calve those heifers close to home and keep an eye on them.
April, yeah, like I said, they start going for the most part start of April. Some of them go a little earlier in March, but
Sure.
it's like I said, you want to find someone that you kind of trust not to toss.
Yeah.
Definitely
Yeah.
roadie over the year and still do, but it's
Yeah.
just buying things in too. Like the other day I was bought well just was buying something online and for spent I think it was $3,700 on this. It was more of a Hereford thing or whatever, and got it in. And just I didn't really see it or whatever, and it's straight up in the air, like narrow framed and way too tall, has a pink eye scar or whatever too, and paid $3,700 for it. So there's some flaws in the line, but
Yeah.
it's
Yeah.
for the most part it does work out nice. So
Sure. Yeah. No, that makes sense. Okay. So I guess moving past calving a little bit into the summer season, one question I'm curious about is you expanded picking up a lot of the ground that people didn't want to farm. Are you dealing with pastures spread out all over the place, or have you managed to keep a relatively close-knit, contiguous
yeah,
property?
it's for the most part, it's kind of half section here, half section there, but starting to build some bigger
Okay.
areas now, which is really nice because it's and there's not a whole lot, like Simpson maybe has 140 people in it kind of thing. So there's
Yeah.
not a whole lot of traffic on the road. So you can still walk them to different sections or whatever. And kind
Okay.
of a big thing with controlling having that many head for not many, a whole lot of guys too. Like you definitely want to, I want to keep everything in a big mob as much as I can,
Yeah.
but there's still quarters scattered kind of thing. But for the most part, it's getting in a base and expanding from there and then go into a different place and then expanding as well. But you do need to, in part, you got to get your foot in the door too. You can't just pick up these
Yeah.
massive chunks of land all over it. It's very hard to do. So
Yeah,
you, I,
for sure.
as well, but that's part of the reason with the capital allocation into logistics more too, because just with cattle liner too, like you can kind of go and haul, load everything up and haul them to a different place and get everything more concentrated as well. So it's a little easier work. So
Sure. So do you spend, I mean, do you have, or are you running, you're running as everything in one group and moving them like?
no, but it's not. There would probably be 12 different groups kind of thing for the most
Okay,
part, but
sure.
it year too. So, but it's, some of those places too, like it's, if you got a quarter down the road, it's tricky to be there 3 times a week kind of thing
Yeah.
if you're doing it for a quarter. So
Yeah.
definitely don't graze as well as I could on these smaller chunks, but on the bigger chunks,
Yeah.
that's where a guy spends more of it, and that's where I really see the improvement in the soil and the grass is when, like I said,
Yeah.
a guy can get up 12 times the stocking rate for whatever reason,
Yeah.
and get, and definitely, like I said, just spent, it's spending more time there or whatever too. But like I said, to expand into different areas, you kind of need to pick up a quarter half section, whatever, and then build off that, I feel.
No, that makes sense. And yeah, I guess I thought we had it rough. We have like pasture on 8 different sites and we'll run 5 or 6 groups at a time. And that's kind of annoying and a pain. But if you got 12 groups,
Yeah.
I got
No, it's
nothing to
probably
complain about.
no, and it's probably some years it's, over that too. So or it'll probably be over that, but like I said too, but you kind of got to do it. But it's like I said, but
Well,
it's
exactly. You're not at the age or time, you don't have the long establishment. You can't be picky at this point, I guess. Or maybe you're starting to be able to be picky, but when you were growing
starting to be
anyway.
definitely starting to def you know it's almost not if you know someone else is established in an area and aggressive, you kind of get to know, where you can expand to. So it's definitely there's a lot more competitive guys to my north, so I stay away from that area a little bit too. So it's just I know I probably can't expand that way, so or as much as I want to, so spend my time in other areas too. So
Well, that makes sense. So
yeah.
I and then I guess in summer you talked a little bit about you're moving them around and having a semi helps to be able to move them a little more efficiently, but you're the bigger groups you're moving more regularly and a little more intensive management than the smaller ones.
Yeah, especially when it comes to July or whatever too. But unless there's stalkers on a big group as well. But for the most part, it's yeah, start to on the summer calves, get a little more intensive in July. And then that kind of moves to late August, September, kind of back off a little bit. Just get to where like they're probably out on they're not out on pasture much past like I wean pretty early too. Like they're probably wean at 100, 120 days. So they're coming off to like get them off the pasture definitely by October and then get them out to this cropland grazing as well. So
Let's see. I'm trying to, I don't want to dive into the stalkers quite yet. I want to talk
yeah,
about them, but
no,
I'm trying to think any more on the fall. So the cows, when are you
summer.
weaning? How are you weaning? If you're terminal, you're not retaining heifers, so you don't have separate groups. And like, what's your weaning and shipping protocols, I guess, for the cow system?
Yeah, for sure. It's like, do you want to get really into the technical part on the weaning, like what I'm given everything, or?
I guess that probably isn't so important. More so just like, yeah, your timing and how you manage nutrition on cows if you're holding them over and into the winter and whatnot.
Yeah, for sure. So that's part of the reason I get them off early is just because they're still in super nice condition, and if a cow dragging them down, the calves get all, they really get in nice condition too. And like I said, getting them onto the stockpile grass, they just take off, and that they have a lot of butter built up on their back before you get into the months too. So that's as good of a, that's money in the bank too if you got a lot of butter in the back too. Like they'll get you through a storm or two that way too. So it's all kind of keeping them in good condition. But it's
So when
yeah,
did you
breed.
say you'd take him off then?
Yeah, that'll be like mid-September.
So if you're calving in, say, June 1st on average, that's
Yep.
June, July, August, really just 3.5 months. Like a
Yeah,
hundred and
they're
hundred
100.
days.
And so that's the biggest issue too. Like there's you run into some more issues, but for the smaller pastures, everything gets trucked home, fence line weaned, get the like I shred out more of a grassy bale too, right in their bedding or whatever. So fence line weed them and just spray it out too, like as a bedding pack. And that kind of simulates, what they're used to as much as anything. But really low stress, really believe in the fence line weaning and do that. And then get the cows back out to grass probably within a week kind of thing for the most part. But that's kind of a flaw too. I played around with weaning them right out in the pastures a little bit this year on the bigger, like just because it's a lot of trucking to bring it 120 pairs home, So it's ran them into the corrals, sorted, weaned them all right out right then and there. And then just let the cows go graze out on that cropland or whatever. Turned out really well, but it's you're tossing square bales over and to feed the calves every day, and it'd be a fair bit of work too. But it yeah, it seemed to work out really good too. But then it's a lot of you got to be pretty intensive with your management on keeping those little calves rolling, you know, too. So because they can go back, but that's those little three, you know, they're really not that heavy. They're probably 400 pounds kind of thing, but it just seems like my big cost is wintering. So that's where I feel like the most, I feel like I can, if, how do I put this? Keeping the cows in as good a condition is you make as much money off that because of your winter costs as if you were going at it more conventionally and trying to get a bigger calf, I guess.
Yeah.
Is kind of my intention there.
No, that makes sense to me. And I've heard it both ways. Some people say it's so important to keep those calves on the cows longer. And other people say, you know, I think Wally Olson has said something like that it doesn't make financial sense to keep a calf on a cow after 400 pounds. After that, you can feed the calf cheaper and the cow cheaper separate than feeding them together or something like that. And we've kind of done the same thing. We're calving a little earlier and we're weaning a little later, but still earlier than most. But yeah, when we can get cows on corn stalks, we're pulling those calves off and getting the cows out on corn stalks so that we can start saving on feed and more efficiently use our high quality feed on the calves, I guess. So.
Exactly that too. So do you guys supplement at all when they're on? I kind of been paying attention a little bit to that. Like, do you guys supplement at all on corn stalks and
the cows are no that we have not supplemented with any protein or anything like that on corn stalks here for many, many years. And it's
where do your guys' temperatures kind of get to then? Like, that's another flaw in this too. Like, that's why I kind of went to Manitoba, is so I can build a better cow to handle this, because some guys up here. And
after I answer this question, I want to ask more about Manitoba because I forgot about that. I'm glad you brought it up. but our typical, we're probably nowhere near as you. This is Fahrenheit now, not Celsius, but it's typically below freezing. I'd say between 0 and 15 degrees most of the time. But we definitely have our below zero and dipping as low as 30, 40 below and with wind chills and stuff. I'd say most of the winter, and I don't even know, I could probably look up average winter temperature or something, but in that 0 to 10, 15 degrees, something like that, Fahrenheit.
But that's, like I said before with Manitoba, like that's kind of the point of doing that, is I feel like there's another level to this too, just because, you know, you're building a hardier cow too. Like, I see some guys, they have their calves on them too, and they're definitely supplementing less than I do. Like, even though I have a really good cost at my winter grazing, like, I feel like I could get that down a little bit too with a better cow. So, and there's some guys doing some cool things up here too, like the Nervous, or, you know, I think it's Eddie Creek or something like that does something like that.
Yep. Nervous and Eddie Creek on Twitter. You're probably following them and stuff. Yeah. Those are some of my favorite follows. Those guys are crushing it out there.
They are for sure. And so that's kind of where, and I talked to Aaron a little bit too about getting some bulls to kind of build up the heifers or whatever to start out that way, but haven't done it quite yet, obviously. But
so let's get into that then, I guess. Manitoba, how far away is this place? Well, how did you find it? What's the size of it? And maybe explain a little bit more why you're trying to do this.
I'm not even sure how big the pasture is, but it's up by Swan River. It's northeast of Swan River, quite a bit. But I've had cows out there too, and like I took just my, this was probably, you know, just took gate run cows out there or whatever. But like the guy had them out there, and I had 120 days out there, and he phoned me out at about 100 days, and he goes, "You better come get your cows." And I said, and I was like, "All right." And he goes, "They're kind of going to shit on you or whatever." So I was like, "Oh, it must be out of grass or whatever." So I drove up, and there's like, I'm used to grass. Like, this prairie wall doesn't get very tall. I was driving in, grass was a foot tall yet. And I was just like, oh, geez, I was wondering what was going on there, and saw the cows, and you could see the ribs, you know, every rib on them down there.
Yeah.
And then but it's just, my cows weren't used to that kind of grass. And then it was really hard on them. So I was like, well, that's the end of that for the pasture. Don't want to bring them out here. But then I got thinking about it. I was like, well, what if I do it in reverse and buy my heifers out there, develop them out there, and then come back. And I don't know for sure because I haven't done it yet, but I think that should build a pretty hardy cow, just because they're used to a harder environment, and then you're bringing back out to this better grass. And I'm hoping they turns them into a nice a nice hearty cow or whatever. So, and just take me to that next level. Because, like I said, my big thing is I want to cut down on winter costs, and that's where I want to be put a little more effort into, I guess.
So maybe kind of make a maternal herd there, producing genetics for your home place.
Switch to more of a maternal program, I think so. And it, yeah, for sure. And like I said too, it's with the way I'm doing it now is mostly a Red Angus crossed to a Charolais, like a calving ease Charolais, basically a glorified heifer bull. And it gets, those tans, they always sell good. Guys out in Ontario love them, up in Canada too. So they usually top the markets up here. But I think if you do one more thing, do it all over again, I think I would go Black Angus, just because I feel like that's as good of a breed as anything. And especially if I'm selling into a grasser market, the black, they always sell. You got guys grassing do love those Angus, just they're a good animal or whatever. But that's probably one mistake I made, was going Red Angus instead of Black Angus, I feel anyway.
Well, I'm a Red Angus producer, so I'm gonna have to disagree with you on that,
But
but I'm just
it's, yeah.
kidding. So I guess I'm curious on this place out there. Is this, how are you managing it? Well, how far away is it? How are you managing it? I mean, is there a certain level of scale required to employ the people that you need to manage it? Or I guess just,
Yes,
how does that
they're
work?
the old PFRA program actually, and it's I like PFRAs up here. They kind of, I don't know if you guys have them down there, but they're big chunks of land where guys just couldn't make a go off it when the
Oh,
drink.
sure.
It's just it's too bad. It's these massive chunks where basically you couldn't farm,
Yeah.
and so the government came and bought it up. And so what they do is employ riders to, keep care, t take care of the cattle or whatever out there.
Yeah.
And then those kind of got all switched to guys that were running them already. But Manitoba, they've made this AMCP program. So it's there's someone out there doing it. So all I do is basically drop off the cattle and pick them up.
Okay. So it's
And
kind
you
of a you're hiring almost a custom grazer type thing.
essentially. But there's kind of it's there's a system in place already. So it takes some of the risk off, just doing that way, just because there is a government. I don't know if it's government. I don't even know what it is, but it's like I said, it's there's a guy out there to kind of manage everything.
Yeah, because we've looked at, and I don't know if we'll ever do it. I've looked at like buying a place. I've wondered about buying a place in another area that might be better or more conducive to raising cow calf than here in Southeast Minnesota. And like just wondered about, the management side. It sounds like the system there is better set up for this than here. But what kind of scale do we need to justify hiring, to be able to make it work that we can hire an employee to manage it appropriately and stuff? And yeah, and I don't know those answers quite yet, but
No, like that's it's a pretty good chunk I have out there, just because this is a pretty rough pasture. There's wolves in there, and it's the grass is bad and everything, so you can't. I don't think I'd want to run stalkers out there, because I don't think your gain would be where you want them. I can't have summer calves there because of the wolves, so they're pretty bitten up. So, but it's so it is a rougher pasture for sure. So maybe that's why there was room out there, I believe, but I don't know. But the guys out there are really good that I dealt with too. So like I said, they're definitely pushing, because they could have kept the cows out there longer, but they did, but it's that's more money in AMCP's pocket. But they're really good about it. They, give me a heads up that things were going south or whatever. So there is definitely trust there as well with me taking them out there. But you got insurance. That's a big thing too. Like insurance is kind of a nightmare to deal with too, because you do have to have them insured out there. Manitoba isn't brand checked, so they could, someone could come in and take them all or whatever. So, and just turn around, sell them or whatever at a market, because there's no brand inspection out there. So,
Things you get to deal with, I guess, wolves and thieves, and yeah, we
paperwork. So,
don't work with that so much, but
they keep a pretty good eye on things, in my opinion.
So, your stocker program, are you keeping your own calves? And I maybe jumped off of the calving weaning thing and stuff. Are you retaining your own calves in moving them into your stocker program or not? And what does your stocker program look like?
Yeah, it's probably 50-50 whether I buy them or keep them. It's kind of like I said, just reading where the markets, the cattle cycle
Sure.
is on whether what you want to do too. But it is nicer to run your own too, just because you know their health, you
Yeah.
know what they do, you know your genetics kind of, so you know what, and just that's the biggest thing too. But definitely buy some in as well. So, but
Sure.
that's I go there. So,
Okay.
and it's like I said, it depends on where you are in the cattle cycle, what you kind of want to buy. Like sometimes it makes sense to buy smaller ones in, obviously, but that's pretty basic stuff. Smaller ones in or whatever too, or bigger ones, or like if
Yeah.
the cattle cycle is on the way down, I feel like you want to buy a bigger, better animal,
Okay.
especially steer for sure too. But if the cattle cycle's climbing, just probably buy a light heifer, I feel, and a bigger steer on the way down. It's kind of my personal rule of thumb, but
Sure.
that there's definitely guys that do it better than me that do a better job of buying as well. So
Yeah, and are you sourcing them direct from people? Like, do you have sources, I guess, where you know you buy them, or are you just shopping sale barns and
yeah, I got order buyers at sale barns for the most part, kind of thing, buying them in,
yeah.
but I've just bought, yeah, I guess that's for the most part, it is buying out of sale barns, I guess, but not, I don't think I've ever done a private
Okay.
deal.
Yeah, I don't even know how common that is anywhere. I was just kind of, yeah, curious, I guess, how you source them, so.
That there is, I've definitely thought about that too. Like you see some of your neighbors and it's just like, oh, those would be perfect for my operation. So I should
Yeah.
probably lean into that a little more, honestly, but I just haven't done that yet. No, but
Sure.
it's for the most part, it's talk to an order buyer and just see what they want to do, or what they kind of come through or whatever for, and get them to do it, because they're better buyers. They sit in those auction barns nonstop, so they're
Yeah.
better buyers than I am for sure. So
Yeah. Yeah. So is there anything, I guess, that I've missed to ask about specifically on all that we've covered? Something that I wouldn't think to ask that you think is worth talking about?
there probably is, but it's another thing too is like land optimization too. Like if you can, what you buy your, like I buy all my hay standing, I guess. So that way I
Sure.
have all my hay grounds converted over, or not all of it, I guess, but for the most part is converted. I still do have, a baler or whatever too. So it's make all, for
Yeah.
the most part, make all my own feed or whatever. And just buying barley in too, like that's, you can just get so much out of barley. Like one thing I felt like I screwed up before is I was growing my own barley, doing all that, and just the way you can optimize your land, it makes sense to buy it in. Like it's so nutrient dense, and you can't fit, like maybe a guy tops out on these smaller, lighter calves, maybe a guy tops out 8, 9 pounds per day, per head per day kind of thing. But overgrown silage, like I don't know, what barley would probably be 3 times nutrient as nutrient dense as silage. So it almost makes sense to grow less silage and just put
Sure.
more of that barley or whatever. And like I said, because I do feel like I need hay, especially I'm gonna, switching into some bale grazing too in the winter. And it just makes sense to kind of buy it. There's some good government programs up here with the with growing alfalfa on your land, and in worse, you're kind of worse soil to kind of improve it.
Okay.
And so a lot of, or not a whole lot, but there's some pretty progressive farmers up here too doing that program, and then they make money, and then I don't have to graze my hay land either, or I can graze my hay land, sorry. And so it's kind of a win-win for them too. So they make some money off their alkali soil or whatever else too,
Yeah.
and then I can still, I'm making money as well too, because I'm grazing my hay land instead. So that's a nice setup as well. It's kind of like a land optimization kind of thing too. So
Yeah. Yeah. Using
is a bit
the
hard.
opportunities available
Yeah.
to you. Yep. Yeah. Good.
Yeah, for sure. And then just, yeah, get as many professionals as the guy can around them, like nutritionists, agronomists, good accountants, major, especially in cattle too. So
So on that piece there, I'm curious. And I don't
yep.
want to offend any nutritionists or things out there and stuff, but a lot of times the people that I've maybe seen or talked to, it seems like their priority number one is sell you something first, and then next priority might be what you actually want or need, especially, and maybe it's different in your model where you have more of the standard cow, and maybe it's just the local nutritionists aren't familiar with the program we're trying to run, and the cows that we have that just don't need a lot of what they have to sell. But I mean, is that something you worry about? Does
Yeah,
it
I
seems
actually.
like there's people doing it without a lot of the things they're selling, so do we really need that?
I know. So, like, my last, I've switched nutritionists actually almost because of that, because I felt like your problem I ran into before, it was just more medicine, more barley kind of going into things. This nutritionist I got now, she's really like she almost more is more, more specific in the cow calf. And she's like, I lean on quite a bit because she has a bunch of different clients too, like, and just seeing what they're doing for different models. And she's really good with kind of, she's, that's it's it's I don't know if I just lucked out with her or whatever, but she's really kind of, they're going into this program, this is what they'll need for supplementation. And I don't feel like she pushes, maybe on corn grazing they don't need all that hay, but I it's kept, it's done good. But at the same time, that's another 50 grand going out too that maybe I don't do, but it's that way I don't run into a calving wreck as well, kind of thing. Maybe that pays for itself over time, kind of thing. So,
Well, that makes sense, and we'll see how things change as you develop this maternal herd and stuff and develop something that's low input and can work better without some of those extra things and stuff. So, yeah, I don't want to tell people who have cows that aren't adapted to cut everything
no,
and stuff, but as a guy who's got,
with
those
buying.
types of cows, I'm a little more skeptical when somebody tells me this is you need this to do something. So,
No, you don't ever. So, and it's like, that's with just, there's been guys kind of say too, like, you don't want to do this, you don't want to do that, but then you do it and it works out. So yes, it's just, you gotta, feel a little more comfortable too with the cattle nutrition side too. So you kind of, you know what they do need, they don't. But yeah, like I said, buying them in, I do feel like I need to supplement probably more than I do, definitely got my guard up too on over supplementing them as well. So with the setups, but
So you're 31. You've accomplished what a lot of people accomplish in a career already. It's pretty darn impressive. You talked about developing this kind of maternal herd out at this place out in Manitoba. Is there anything else that you have goals for or that you're like looking forward in the future that you hope to accomplish with your farm or ranch?
that's, I just started into kind of like value buying, especially like really small calves, I guess. So it's kind of looking at building, I got room for probably 1,000 head, maybe a little more than that in my current feedlot or whatever, but looking on that. So I was kind of, I don't have a number that, I don't know if you're like number on what head I want to get to. It's just expand if it makes sense, kind of thing. And usually, but yeah, the feedlots maybe the next step, like not a big feedlot at all, but was kind of pecking around on that is kind of maybe the next venture a guy gets into for value buying calves, I guess, too. So I was kind of looking at, I don't know if this opens any doors. This is kind of part of the reason too, is looking to, was looking into like an AI based buying algorithm. But from what I know now is that, where are my notes on that? But it doesn't, there's no AI based thing kind of ready to rock quite yet, but there is different algorithm programs for buying things, because I feel like I'm so small. Even if a guy got this up and running and it's 2,000 head, the bigger guys are still going to walk, you can't control that. So maybe I was looking at getting into the little more of the technology side and developing that and getting these different buying algorithms to kind of get in place. And there is some already too. I forget
Tell me what that is, I guess. I'm not familiar with this AI
like,
buying or algorithms you're talking.
yeah, and I don't think there is anything out there yet, but like a line of seven, like it takes into different things into different, like if it's if corn's doing this, if live cattle are doing this, and it's kind of the same. Oh, what I'm trying to go with this, but it takes so many different things into account that I feel like I can't cover properly, and kind of give you indicators on when to buy, what to buy, where to buy, kind of thing. And that's what I was kind of, but the issue with that is like, you have to, there's still gotta be some human influence into it. And so that's, like I said, with this AI, like it's not there yet, but maybe within 5 years, and it'll learn. So you don't have to have all that input into that program as well. When, I don't know if just when I'm buying or whatever, like lighter calves or whatever, it like when I was buying them this fall, I would have to basically go 10 cents over the market just because the market was climbing so quickly. And so I would look at the last report and then have to go 10 cents up. And then usually you'd have to phone the order buyer and be like, yeah, I need another, add another 5 cents onto that order or 10 cents per pound. And so I feel like maybe an AI is would, and I felt like I didn't do a good job of buying, I guess, too, especially during the peak, obviously because of that, because they were climbing and I shouldn't have done that. Should have waited a little bit or whatever for the fall run to get a little more into it. But I feel like maybe an AI, if an AI thing could learn how, you know, your indicators, and then it would give you a better indicator on when to buy or what to buy, what classes to buy, kind of thing. And maybe that's kind of a way to go is get a jump up on the technology or whatever to help this feedlot and just relying on good management, you know, on
Yeah, so
keeping
just better
healthy health.
data, more less on the production side and more on the buying and the, you know, when to sell. Yeah, that kind of the marketing decisions.
Yeah, and there's so much data already out there for cattle too, like everything that's included on that. So I feel like it would AI would is really going to take off in cattle and probably within a day or whatever. So
Well, that's
definitely keeping.
interesting. I'll be interested to see what actually happens because you're right. I would say most ranchers and farmers are very much producers and production based, and we're great producers. And maybe a lot or most are probably not the best of marketers. And if AI and technology can come in and do that and make that
Exactly.
easier, but then the thing that'll be interesting at that point then is if everybody all of a sudden has access to this technology, does anybody have a competitive advantage anymore?
Exactly. And that's the thing too. So, but it's there's some neat things being done out in like out in Alberta. Like the U of A has this armchair rancher program that they're working on too. And it even has things on predicting weather and all that, but it's not yet. And then there's another couple out there that they I was just reading an article about it, but they have like a facial AI-based facial recognition for the cows too. So they can even tell if two cows calved out beside each other, they can tell which one is which. They can tell if the tail gets, you know, lifted or it's about to calve out. And I think it sends a text to their phone actually. So the kind of things based on that too. And I think you could even go into, you know, genetics and all that too, and really get combine this bull with this cow kind of thing too. So it's going to be interesting to see where that goes. That's like I said, and it I kind of dug into getting an algorithm built, I guess, but it's I think it's 300, 400 grand to get one built, to get one coded, you know, and all that. But I think that can pay for itself fairly quick. But at the same time, if AI is right around the corner, that's kind of stopped at because it's like, well, even though if you had an algorithm built, it would, you know, you'd have all that data ready to rock to plug into AI, but maybe it doesn't even connect kind of thing. So kind of stopped out on that, I guess, at the moment. But if any, like I said, if it, reach out if anybody's dug, there's people, you know, maybe I'm something, maybe guys are already have this kind of thing. But it's yeah, it's definitely interesting to something to keep an eye on, I think so.
No, it will definitely be interesting to see what technology can impact, because you're right, the marketing side, I could really see it starting to impact things and stuff. The technology and the production side worries me. It seems like that's the very thing that takes people's competitive advantage away as a low cost producer and stuff, is
Well,
the costs that add up in there. And you start buying technology, it seems like margins get washed away pretty quickly. But
oh,
yeah,
for sure.
marketing is something we could all work probably to improve
Oh,
upon. But even with a good marketing program, if you have a horrible production model or a really expensive, like most cow calf producers probably are not, they don't have the most cost effective production model, then it doesn't really.
No.
It'll still be challenging to be profitable, but
No, and that's yeah, like I said, like even well, just with improving my grazing in the summer too. Like there was one year in there, even though I was, you know, grazing a lot better, my winter costs weren't under control yet either. So I was almost dropping or going backwards just because I was running more head, but my winter, you know, so I was expecting costs, even though I was cutting costs in the summer, and it's just, you know, kind of getting that. Many ways to do things wrong though.
For sure. Well, I guess I'm curious then, a couple wrap-up questions here. One would be, do you have two, three, four resource recommendations that you think people should check out? And that could be anything, you know, a podcast, conference, book, you know, whatever that has been valuable to you that you'd recommend to people.
Yeah, for sure. Knowledge Rich Ranching is probably my favorite book out there. That's really good. And then got into Man Cattle Veld, listened to that, and then read it as well. So that's a really good one too. And that's kind of what got me going in this developing program. That was really an interesting book. And then Quality Pasture is a really good one too. Ranching, like 12-year-old, is really like seems like one of the better grazes. He's got it. It just seems like he keyed in on northern grazing as well. So
Yeah.
he that's definitely a really good book. But there's other books too outside of ranching that you can kind of apply to it as well. Like Psychology of Money, is really good too. I really like that one. Thinking in Bets is really good too, and Decision Making, Upstream,
What was
Outliers,
that
things like
one? Thinking.
Thinking in Bets.
Thinking in Bets.
That's
Interesting.
really, I just got into that one. So it's kind of, it just almost like if a, it's if you think something's depending on where your risk threshold is,
Oh, sure.
and
That makes
yeah, it's
sense. Like, what are the odds of this working out? If they're in the plus, then at some point, yeah, just do it. Interesting.
yeah, that's a really good book too. I really like that one too. And like I said, Upstream, Outliers are really good too.
Sure.
So, and yeah, anything. And then got a smart TV the other day too. So
Yeah.
it just been on YouTube quite a bit, watching conferences and all that too. So there's pretty good stuff out there. And even taking little things like Greg Judy's, videos that he has up to. I was never played around a lot with that too, but just taking little tips out of stuff like that too is kind of neat. So
Yeah, for sure. And then last question then, where can people find you or reach out if they want to learn more or have questions for you?
yeah, sure. I'm not on social media a whole lot, but a little bit. And then I don't know if they want to reach out, maybe direct message on like Facebook or Twitter. I guess it'd almost be the best thing. I
Cool.
don't post on there a whole lot or at all really, but
Yeah.
it's definitely not on there. Maybe once a week kind of thing, but
Sure.
that'd be about as good a thing as anything, I guess, kind of thing.
Awesome. Well, perfect. Thank you so much for doing this, Rylan. I really appreciate it. I appreciate you sharing everything you're doing. It's pretty darn impressive what you've accomplished. I'm excited to see where you go.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's exciting. Like I said too, there's definitely money in cow calf, so just really depends on how you do it. So
The Herd Quitter Podcast is brought to you by Faro Cattle Company, whose mission is to help ranchers put more fun and profit into their business. You can get more information on Faro Cattle Company at farocattle.com. And if you enjoy what you've heard on this podcast, be sure to subscribe and check us out on Facebook and Instagram at Herd Quitter Podcast or at herdquitterpodcast.com.